with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Minute past the hour, and looky here, we have made it all the way to Friday again. This is the 21st day of November 2014. This here is the Horn. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. That's where you go to get into the chat room, which is beginning to fill up. Well, it's not, you can never fill up. But folks are wandering in. Good evening, Anatole. Good evening, Benny. Good evening, Jug of Punch. Good evening, Mr. Gibson. And good evening, Texas T. And others will be along presently, I have no doubt. It is Friday on the front porch. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Let's get that out of the way. Yeah. And we've got, we always have a lot to talk about, but Friday on the front porch is a particular favorite for a lot of people because Friday on the front porch is when we pull together the ordinary, extraordinary roundtable of regular folks via the Horn Malloy Skype chat room and also via the Gizmo line. Let's not forget the Gizmo line. Just checking to make sure the Gizmo line is ready to go. And it is. Also at headonradionetwork.com, you'll find access to the podcasts and the streams via the Listen Live pop-out players. Yes, indeedy. And, yes, the contribute page has, of course, the PayPal interface, which is how we keep all of this going. We don't sell anything here. We don't charge anybody any money for anything. Be it podcasts or stream access or chat room participation. Nothing is for sale here because this ain't a business, really. I mean, this is an effort to build community without an overtly commercial intent or capitalist intent. And so we try to raise $150 every evening. I want to send out special thanks to Joan. Thank you very kindly, Joan. Joan finished off the last of Robert's Up Over Down Under challenge for the 20th of the month, and that is deeply appreciated. So we come into this evening with another challenge on the table. I had a note just a little bit ago from our good friend Dr. John. He said, I'd like to place a $50 challenge on the table. You and the callers and Dr. Bill have been on fire recently, and boy, Dr. Bill has. I would say that the Horn is the most informative and educational media I consume, but I hate that sort of language. I understand why. And everyone's built much more than a media outlet. You've built a community that I value well beyond the means I have to support it, John says. So I'm giving what I can. I'll match the first $50 to come in, which will take care of a chunk of a day's fundraising, and glad I can help a bit. Thank you very kindly, John. And thank you for the kind words about the community. The community is what makes this special. Because God knows there's oodles, well, not oodles, but there's more than there used to be. There's a number of choices, listening choices for people who want progressive information. And the fact that so many of you choose this program in this time slot is deeply inspiring. And I think testament to the quality of the community we have built here. We have good minds, good will, good spirit. We have good times. And it's all made possible because you are determined to keep it going. So thank you, Dr. John, for getting us started with that $50 challenge. Dr. John will double whatever comes in up to the first $50 to help us stay a little bit ahead of fundraising here, which we kind of need to do because next week is going to be a short week. Thank you, Dr. John. Thank you indeed. So anybody wanting to jump in, the PayPal interface is over at headonradionetwork.com, or you can use the traditional mail address, which is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, B-E-C-K-L-E-Y, W-V 25801. And remember, checks and money orders should be made payable to The Horn or Head on Communications or something like that, because, and certainly not to Bob Kincaid, because I never see him, and Boss Man Wayne takes care of all that kind of stuff. It's been a lovely couple of days. It's warmed up a little bit, and it hasn't been quite so brutally cold overnight. Although there's more of that coming. Well, you know, winter's on the way. But we've gotten a little bit of a break. It's always nice to go into the bedroom to go to sleep at night and not be able to see one's breath. But it's been a lovely couple of days as well for another reason. I mentioned, I believe, that our dear friend Dr. Allen from Texas volunteers a portion of his time every year to go and share his services at a hospital in Kenya. And he just got back recently from his Kenyan expedition. He sent me a couple of photographs along, because I'm fascinated by such. Sent me a couple of photographs along, pictures out the window of his office, picture of his microscope station. And his office literally looked out over the Rift Valley. Now, for those of you with an anthropological bent, you know that those two words, Rift Valley, just, they make you tingle, because that is the birthplace of what we understand to be humanity. And so imagine my surprise yesterday when a little envelope arrived in the mailbox from Dr. Allen, and he had sent along, and it was just stirring to hold it in my hand, a letter opener, but not just any letter opener. It was a letter opener in the shape of kind of a ceremonial blade carved out of solid rosewood with almost a mirror finish to it, hand-carved, and the hilt is a tiny hand-carved rhinoceros. And it is a piece of exquisite craftsmanship and stunning beauty. And I sat there looking at it and holding it and just being sort of transported by it all. To think of the work that went into it, where it came from, that kind of thing will send me on speculative flights that are, you know, for a guy sitting in the hills and hollers of West Bicol, Virginia, both transformative and transportive. I may never see Kenya, but I've got a little bit of the place where humanity began, sitting right here in my little hillbilly mansion. Another thing happened in the mail yesterday that was equally stirring. Got a care package from Sparky. Sparky's been cleaning out the man cave, as you may recall. He's mentioned that a couple of times. And he found a couple of things that he thought would speak to me. And so, lo and behold, I went down to the post office yesterday, and there it was, a United States Postal Service priority mailbox, had some heft to it. And in it was, among other things, well, you know, I've told you that we've got a couple of gargoyles who sit and loom over me during the program here. Well, the gargoyles now have a friend. A little, old, hand-carved, wooden gnome is now looking down at me as the broadcast proceeds. And he's a charming fellow. Along with that, because I'm fascinated by these things, an old, but in very good condition, straight razor. It is absolutely beautiful with a pair of, what would you call them? Translucent, the scales, and that's what you call the handle in a straight razor. The scales are translucent, and the steel appears to be in extremely good good condition. It's gorgeous. And I'll end up shaving with it when I start shaving again. This is, after all, No Shave November. Also in it, in the care package, yay, was a package of smoky ghost pepper cheese, and a bag of California grown pistachios, and they are right tasty, I can tell you. And that reminds me that the premium does remain on the table via Sparky. Anybody who wants to kick in $100 will get your own care package of your choice of smoky ghost pepper cheese or a bag of pistachios. Just tell me which you want when you, if you decide to avail yourself, and it'll be there for you. So, you know, your choice. But also in the care package. Also in the care package, this. That is a genuine antique cowbell. We have a new sound effect here in the horn studio. I was thinking we could use it for toaster rewards when something particularly funny is said. But then again, it doesn't just have to be for toaster awards, because there's never a bad time for more cowbell. Right? Right. So I think we're gonna have a heck of a good time with that in programs to come. Yep, okay, good reaction in the chat room. Everyone, a lot of general agreement that one always needs more cowbell. And Echo Charlie has joined the chat room, as has Devin. And good evening, John CDN. And good evening, Ark Ellison and R.L. Smith. Lots of folks wandering by. Now we have our two veteran, indefatigable chat room moderators, Lottie and Sparky, in the room. Good, good, good. We're off to a good start. 13 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch. We'll open up the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group and the Gizmo line, in another 45 minutes or so. In the meantime, I thought we might check in with the, that didn't take long, department. I predicted last night, and it wasn't exactly an act of prestidigitation or prophecy or anything. It was just the ability to recognize that wingnuts do what wingnuts do. And you may recall that last night I said during the president's speech on immigration is what we're calling it. I don't know that it was necessarily it's about people who are here, not people who are immigrated, because it was made clear that this has nothing to do with the future. This is people who've been here for 5 years. But anyway, the big speech was out there, and I did say that when the president made reference to the Old Testament passage about for we were strangers once in a strange land. We were strangers in the land of Egypt. You know, that would go over like in a punch bowl. And it did, of course. In this particular case, naturally, we go over to Fox News TV, Radio Rwanda, for the coverage. Yes.
We were strangers once, too.
So there, the President of the United States last night in the cross hall at the White House invoking scriptures, which I believe had to do with...
This is Steve Doocy speaking, and I'm not sure who the attack blonde is, but wearing a necktie instead of a bow tie now, Tucker Carlson seated opposite him So that will be part of the insanity that you hear ensue.
Feeding the poor and the hungry, and nothing about visas.
Here's the Bible scholar in chief lecturing us, telling us that it is not kicking people out of your country who've come here illegally.
Wait. Did he just call him the Bible scholar in chief? How petty.
You dick!
Yeah.
Is tantamount to, quote, oppressing them, and God is opposed to that. And God, by the way, is on President Obama's side.
But this is a man who, you know, claims to have been in church for a long time. Did he just read that verse in Scripture and decide to use it right now, we wonder? Charles Krauthammer says, I'm wondering about that. This is the audacity of nope.
I find the president's audacity here rather remarkable. He tells us at the end, in that little oration that we heard, that I have to explain why I feel so strongly about this issue. So strongly, in fact, that he invokes Scripture to support his executive order. Well, if he felt so strongly about the issue, why did he delay announcing this until after he got past the election? Because he knew that had he announced it earlier, and after all, it's supposed to be so urgent, it would have damaged the Democrats' chances in the election.
I think we can put that argument to bed. The Democrats damaged the Democrats' chances in the election. How did the Democrats damage the Democrats' chances in the election? By trying to be Republicans. By not giving anybody anything to be excited about. You'll notice that the progressives got reelected. You'll notice that the mugwumps did not. So, Charles Krauthammer, a great big shut up to you, buddy.
Why did he not do this before the 2012 election? Because he didn't want to jeopardize his own reelection. But most important, if he feels so strongly about this, and Scripture dictates that this ought to be done, why did he do nothing about this in 2009 and 2010, when he had control of the White House, the House, and the Senate, and he could actually have done this constitutionally?
Bull. Barack Obama has never had control of the Senate of the United States. He did have a majority in the House. The House passed a lot of bills during the time that the Democrats had the majority. What happened to them? Why, oh, look, they went over to the Senate and died because Harry Reid allowed Mitch McConnell to use him like a dish rag. Because Harry Reid let Mitch McConnell control the Senate and compel every vote to require a 60-vote majority. Because Harry Reid allowed Mitch McConnell and the Republican Party to filibuster more during that period of time than any other Senate in the history of the country in those three terms of Congress. So, again, a great big shut up to you, Charles Krauthammer. Apparently, my sentiments are shared by others. A note coming from Ron and Raleigh. Why won't Krauthammer just die? Oh, that's right. Evil's a preservative. Ron pointing out with regard to the cowbell. Well, all you need now is Christopher Walken. More cowbell. Anybody know his number? Maybe we could get him to. Well, now I'll just cut out the clip. Just a second here. And a note coming in, another note coming in from GK in Minnesota. Hey, Bob. What the... Don't the cowardly Democrats ever bring up St. Raygun and Pappy Bush's executive actions with regard to immigration? Well, actually, Barack Obama brought that up specifically last night. He even quoted George Bush, thinking that maybe they would suddenly... all those pasty-faced, doughy white Republicans would suddenly like him if he would just quote Dim Leader. GK continuing, I guess that will never happen until we get some real Democrats elected into office. Also, my yellow lab was quite curious when she heard the cowbell. Oh, I do wonder what goes on inside a dog's head. Well, wasn't it a bell that Pavlov used to get dogs to drool and think that they were going to be fed or something like that? Maybe it's genetic. Apparently, Charles Krauthammer, Tucker Carlson, Steve Doocy, and the Attack Blonde have gotten upside Steve's last nerve. F those people. That's the subject line of the email. These mother effers are going to talk about someone throwing the Bible around. F those people. F those assholes who soil the message of Jesus. Sorry to yell here, because that was all in caps. The disingenuous here is disgusting, and I'm choking on it. Hold on tight, Steve, because we're not quite halfway through the clip. Sorry.
Bypassing legislation.
And had they done it that way, gone through the actual Congress, it would be law. But right now, what he is suggesting and what he's going to do is just temporary.
Well, you mean by seeking counsel of those who are elected to voice of the people, as does Proverbs 11:14, coming into a scripture showdown where there is no God.
Oh, no, really? Really? The Fox Attack Blonde is going to quote the Bible now? I wonder which fund he sent this into.
Were elected to voice of the people, as does Proverbs 11:14, coming into a scripture showdown where there is no guidance, the people fall. But in the abundance of counselors, there is victory. The way of fools seems right to them, but the wise listen to advice. That's Proverbs 12.
Oh. Yeah, but see, okay. But the problem is, the right wing have not listened to advice, and they are fools, and they have no wise counsel.
I'll swap
things around a little bit. Phone lines open right now. 304-663-4676, 304-574-8178, Bob Kincaid Horn, Skype to Skype. For anyone who can tell me one good idea any member of the Republican Party has had since, say, the year 2000. Just one. One good idea. I have a feeling the phone's not going to ring. Indeed, indeed. But do continue, frantic foxers.
15. I got to say, we can have a political debate, but for this guy specifically, the president who spent his career defending...
Really? Tucker Carlson refers to the president as this guy?
Listen to advice. That's Proverbs 12:15.
I got to say, we can have a political debate, but for this guy specifically, the president who spent his career defending late-term abortion, among other things, lecturing us on Christian faith, that's too much.
No, it's not, Tucker, because there's nothing about abortion in the Bible. There's a lot, however, about not maltreating the poor or the strangers among you. Yeah, I know.
I mean, that is too much. We always heard the Christian right. This is the Christian left at work, and it's repugnant. How many times over the last 6 years, 8 years, have we heard this president, then senator, badmouth George W. Bush? A million times.
Right.
Last night he actually quoted him in a positive way, which I think was the first time.
Whatever it takes. I guess that's the point.
Pulling out all this stuff.
But not communicated with him, as we heard from George W. Bush.
But to quote scripture?
From the president.
Really? To quote scripture? Well, when they first heard it, they probably thought he was quoting the Quran, you know, because he is a secret Muslim. Jesus! How dare he quote scripture? He's not a white president! Because every president has quoted scripture, but they have a hissy because the brown one did it.
That is totally out of bounds. I mean, that is just out
of
bounds.
Do you think it's out of bounds?
Really? Really, Tucker Carlson? Scripture quoting by presidents is out of bounds. Ordinarily, I would agree. But, you know, like I said last night, I have no objection to the Bible being treated as we treat any ancient document, as an artifact, a relic of, well, in the case of the Old Testament, you know, the Bronze Age. Right? And, you know, on the other hand, treating it as the inerrant word of the invisible, you know, the invisible juvenile bearded delinquent in the sky. No. Just no. Tweet coming in from Sandra. That effer Krauthammer used to criticize Christopher Reeves for giving the disabled hope. LOL. He's horrifying. Oh, he's nasty. He is. He's just nasty. Okay. I have a confession to make. And this is going to probably get me in trouble. And I hope our differently abled listeners will forgive me for saying this. Ferg and I were at a baseball game in Washington D.C. I guess summer before last, and Charles Krauthammer came wheeling past us. And I just looked at Ferg and said, what I wouldn't give for a stick to put in his spokes about now. Because he's just odious. Just odious. We'll finish the clip and then go to the Skype line. Stand by.
Quoted scripture back.
No, I think it's
scripture off.
It's just different. Outrageous for him to suggest that people who oppose this are somehow oppressing, quote, oppressing immigrants.
To you.
Well, you know, when you want to tear families apart, like, say, the children who were born American citizens and rip them away from parents who were not, and, you know, either ship in America to take away citizenship and ship them and basically compel children to go to a country which they know not, yeah, I'd say you're oppressing. That's pretty close. That sounds like oppression to me. Doesn't that sound like oppression to you? Hey, Devin, does that sound like oppression to you? Help! Help! I'm being repressed, bloody peasant!
Ay. Yeah, you needed a chain or something to put in the spokes, you know.
I would have been happy for. I would have been.
Nice
I would have
wound up.
I would have been. I would have been happy for a broom handle.
Oh dear.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, well, Krauthammer sucks. I mean, you know, that's just how it is. But as much as this pains me, and it truly does, my wonderful, absolutely peachy, teabagging Republican representative, it's actually done something rather smart.
Oh, you mean David McKinley?
Yes.
Share. Now does this constitute a good idea by a Republican?
Well, I suppose doing this is a good idea for a Republican. Opposing the TPP and opposing all trade treaties and entanglements and agreements and I didn't even know that you know somebody as a Republican would do that. Hell, I didn't know somebody as a congressman would do that.
Yeah. I don't know. I think there's a lot. There's more than a few people that are distrustful of the TPP. And in David McKinley's case, it's a matter of being right for the wrong reasons. He's against the TPP because he thinks, you know, that one in his White House is for it. You know, it's the Groucho Marx defense. Whatever you're for, I'm against it.
But for whatever reason, he still did the right thing there anyways, you know, coming out against it. I guess you're going to take what you can get, you know. Now, on the other hand, you know, he's Mr. Pipeline.
Right.
Which, you know, made my head explode. Even though I knew that's what it would be, but, you know.
Yeah, are you talking about, the Dominion Pipeline that they want to bury across West Virginia?
No, I'm talking about
Keystone XL. Let's just say David McKinley has never met a pipeline he didn't like. You know what's surprising? This dude is an engineer.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, he loves to lay pipe. You know, it's, what can I say?
Stop it. You're working blue too early in the program, Devin.
Well, I mean, you know, I seen somebody photoshopped McConnell or McTurtle up on top of the Keystone Pipeline up there on his knees with his hard hat, you know.
Oh, Jesus.
You know, it was an Onion article. And they said that the Republicans have freaked out and headed to the Midwest to build the pipeline themselves. And they had a bunch of Republicans, you know, photoshopped in around the pipeline and stuff. The McTurtle on top of it.
And, you know, that's the one gotcha question that the Republicans just can't answer. If this pipeline is so awesome, why don't they just ship it across their own country? Oh, wait, because, among other things, their indigenous population has said it will be a cold day in Alberta. Well, no. You know what I mean. The indigenous populations have said ain't going to happen. And even here in the United States, what band of people was it the other day that said they considered the XL pipeline an act of war?
The Lakota.
I believe it was.
And, you know, if I could get up there, if they're in trouble, I'd help them.
You know, it's hard. And this is just, it's a cognitive disconnect for me, Devin. How do you not stand shoulder to shoulder with people who do not want their land and their lives ruined?
Well, because you don't want your land and your lives ruined. Because that's usually the consequence of standing up with somebody else. Then the forces that are coming after them come after you and yours. It's fear. And, you know, having something to lose.
Yeah, for 50 jobs. That's it's like Marty just pointed out, said if the Keystone XL will be so safe, how about the politicos in favor all move their homes and families right next to it, you know, for the entire run? Now, see, they're not going
to
do that.
Yeah, and you're not going to see the Oath Keepers and the Peace Keepers and the Border Watchers and the
Klan,
all assorted baggers out there guarding that pipeline.
No. And the lies and half truths and what have you that have you being a West Virginian, you'll understand, other people outside won't necessarily, but I heard Hoppy Kercheval, yes, a guy named Hoppy is the Rush Limbaugh wannabe of the state of West Virginia. I heard Hoppy Kirchhoff will say, well, yeah, and not only are they going to transport tar sands oil, they're going to transport Bakken crude through it, too. And I thought, that'll be fun.
Yeah, I mean, that's,
I mean, you know why, right? I mean,
Bakken,
now tar sands crude is so thick and gloppy that the whole pipeline has to be heated for it to even move. Meanwhile, Bakken crude is at 40% volatility. You heat that up, and it's going to get real fun real fast.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, you do have to add solvents and things to the tar to make it go through the pipeline. The heat's not enough, but still.
And by the way, I think I should probably issue Devin a hockey puck warning for this one. Wait a minute. Hockey puck. Hockey puck. Have you heard the latest act of genius? And I think this is proposed for here in West Bicol, Virginia. The latest genius idea over to the Department of Highways, the WVDOT, they're going to de-ice our roads. You ready for this? The silence.
Proceed.
Okay. They're going to de-ice our road by spraying fracking brine on the roads.
Fuck!
I don't think I've ever heard you do that before, Devin. Not kidding!
Motherfuckers, they need to be taken out behind the barn and up against the wall, motherfucker.
Oh, my God. Yeah, Boss Man Wayne told me about that the other day.
Jesus.
I mean, I thought it was pretty amazing when the geniuses a few winters ago, when the Missouri River froze up solid, when the geniuses said, well, we'll just throw some coal ash on it to melt the ice. I mean,
yeah, well, it's not like that doesn't happen here, too. I mean, you know.
But no, it is being proposed that fracking brine, and that's what they're calling it. It's just salt water.
Oh. Yes, it's pure ocean water. Nothing to worry about there. Even though it's radioactive. Make your hair fall out, your teeth fall out. Make you have to wear a diaper for the rest of your very short life. Yeah, just.
Yeah, that'll be a great idea. And see this now because there's an element of good idea to this, I think, because it was last winter during the brutal winter that we had that I was reading stories about how part of the reason that Wisconsin kept its roads so clear is because they spray their roads with the leftover cheese brine, you know, from the cheese making industry, the salt water. But there's a big difference between cheese brine and fracking fluid.
I mean, the worst thing that's going to happen from cheese brine is the road will smell like feet.
Or other things.
This other stuff, you won't have any feet left.
Yeah, it's going to smell like stump.
I mean, you know, the only smell there'll be is of your rotting corpse. I mean, you know, it's. But, you know, that's the American way. I mean, you know, they want to go back to, you know, the 1870s and, you know, the smell back then was all the rotting beasts of burden that were dead along all the roads because, you know, they worked them to death.
Well,
rather than take proper care of them and have them last a little longer. Yeah. Welcome to the Gilded Age.
Yeah.
Mark II.
Yeah. Welcome to the Poisonous Gilded Age. And by the way, you saw the story about the DuPont plant down in Texas that blew that gassed, didn't blow up, it just gassed some it gassed four workers to death last week, right?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, I forget the name of the gas, but it got loose. You know, you'll have that. Accidents happen, and you know Texas doesn't want to impose it doesn't want to insult the industries by thinking that they can't, you know, self-report and take care of them. So some gas got loose and it killed four workers. But here's the irony of it. The story that I saw posted about it at thinkprogress.org, the photo that went with it, get this, was a picture of the DuPont plant at Bell, West Virginia, because I know that place, and I could see the mountains across the Kanawha River from it. I'm thinking, you know what? That ain't Texas. And I went, no, that's Bell.
And it was probably the same chemical that that we had the almost Bhopal in
no, it
West
wasn't,
Virginia.
It wasn't methyl isocyanate.
Okay.
Okay. Now,
well,
now
you know the
okay,
system.
Okay. So now you're going to make me do this.
But that plant in Texas, the system worked. I mean, the sensors detected the poison.
It's just that the sensors were meat sensors, right?
Well, yeah. They're cheaper.
Yeah. Ah, there it is. There, yeah,
I mean, you
this
know,
is
you
from.
You don't have to pay to maintain them. You don't have to buy spare parts. And when they fail, then you just there's 100 more.
And you make the widow go through a horrifying workers' comp process, and maybe she'll just give up.
Yeah, and then you give her $100 and say she'll have a nice Christmas.
Yeah, you didn't forget that, did you? Yeah, LaPorte, Texas, Devin. Four workers killed and one was injured this past Saturday during a hazardous chemical leak at a DuPont industrial plant in suburban Houston. The chemical, methyl mercaptan, began leaking from a valve around 4 a.m. in a unit at the plant in LaPorte, 20 miles east of Houston. Plant officials said the release was contained by 6 a.m. After it had been inhaled by the meat sensors. It was used at the plant to create crop protection products such as insecticides and fungicides, and apparently it also works as a humanicide. The cause of the leak was not immediately known. Well, of course not.
Well, no. The cause of the leak was act of God. That angry God, you know, he's got to get his pound of flesh.
Yeah. Oh, by the way, this is also the same chemical, and this is worth considering. This is the same chemical that is also often added to natural gas to give it an odor. You know that natural gas stink? That's the same stuff that killed these guys.
The stuff they put in propane.
Yeah, that gives it that awful smell.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. Just think, you have the same stuff in your house.
Jeff Suggs, emergency management coordinator for LaPorte, Texas, said the chemical release was not toxic for those living nearby, but that it caused a smell that's similar to rotten eggs.
Ah, well, that's nice. That's really nice. Everybody likes their town to smell.
I mean, Charleston smelled.
I guess it just.
I remember as a child.
Eliminated the oxygen in the area.
I remember as a child visiting St. Louis, Missouri, and the Switzer's Licorice Factory was downtown. I don't know if it still is. Maybe it is. Maybe it's not. But that whole area of downtown St. Louis smelled like licorice. Well, now we know that you don't even have to have a licorice factory if you want your town to smell like licorice. All you have to do is let go of a little methylchlorohexane methanol. And your whole town could smell like licorice.
Stuff. Well, Lottie says that that chemical is the same one that is responsible for the smell of skunk.
Wow.
So, P.U. dead.
Indeed, indeed.
Yeah, it's... Okay.
Just another happy day in the capitalist wonderland.
A volatile, clear to yellowish liquid with fetid, extremely foul-smelling odor, commonly described as skunk odor.
Wow. All right. Well, we'll roll along here and clear things out and get ready to get. I presume Sparky's got the bat signal up already, and we'll get ready to fire up the extraordinary ordinary roundtable. I trust you'll be there or no?
Yeah, I'll be there in a little bit.
Okay. I know you've got metered bandwidth, so I try to take these things.
Oh, it just rolled over yesterday, so we're okay now.
Oh, nice.
There for about 2 weeks I didn't. That's why I wasn't around much.
Yeah, I noticed you were kind of absent.
Yeah. Yeah, I was doing good to maybe get the show sometimes. They sort of chop it up.
I was going to say, do they when you roll over? If you go over or get near, do they start throttling you?
Well, it's not really throttling as much as it is just blocking stuff. I mean, there is some throttling, but it's mainly just blocking functionality of things. Like, even the dial-up stream will continuously rebuffer.
Oh, charming.
Even the very low quality, 8 kbps it does the same thing. So it's not a bandwidth issue as much as a chopping things up. Now, I still get internet between midnight and 5 a.m., even when it's, metered like that. The metering kicks out at midnight till 5 a.m., so I can do whatever then, but that doesn't help out much for the show when I run out of internet.
No, not so much. Oh, here's a fun... Ooh, 10 bucks. Ow, damn.
10 bucks a gigabyte.
Sparky tells me he's just put up the bat signal. Here's another fun fact. Ron and Raleigh writing in, a few years ago here in North Carolina, industry sprayed the sides of the roads with dioxin. They could give a flying F about you and yours. Better living through chemistry.
Isn't that one of the things they used at Love Canal?
Something makes me think the answer to that is probably yes.
Where they were dumping the toxic waste in the streets to keep down the dust.
Oh, Jesus. Now, Love Canal was stuff that was already buried under the ground.
Well, this must have been another one. It was up in that area that they would drive around there in a water truck, and they would dump all kinds of toxic waste on the roads to keep down the dust. At least that was the thing that they said, I guess a developer or whatever. And, yeah, it's another super fun site. Yeah, it's insane. And of course dioxin, that's in, Agent Orange?
I think so. Maybe it's PCBs we're thinking about. Oh, note coming in from Sergi. Fun fact, Fort Worthless here got its nickname Funky Town from the fact that the factories and other industry here often caused large swaths of the city to smell like rotten eggs and rotting carrion back in the day. Signed, Sergi. Dad, did you fart again? Kyle.
The other thing is, I don't know if you've ever been around Anmore or West Virginia, but it has a distinct smell as well.
I don't think I have.
Where Union Carbide to make the carbon there.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Carbon furnaces. That's where they made the...
Well, when you pass the DuPont factory at Bell, it's not a pleasant experience. I have gotten so used to, I mean, I'm so familiar with the drive now, that about 2 miles before I get to Bell, I close the vents on the car and roll up all the windows.
Yeah.
Because
and even then, you're out of luck. But, fun fact that Anmore, West Virginia, the Union Carbide facility there, produced the graphite shells for Fat Man and Little Boy. Which were the first two atomic bombs dropped on human beings.
Yes, back when the United States became the first and only country ever to attack another country, and particularly a civilian population, with atomic devices. Yeah. I just had a note in from Luda. Luda answered a question for us. He says, just like when they dammed the Missouri River for electricity, it's all going through Indian land in South Dakota, because the government ain't about to put that pipeline through white man land. And if they have to, it'll be through poor white communities. And by the way, it was the Sikangu Lakota from the Rosebud Reservation, my people, who said the Keystone XL pipeline is an act of war.
Which it is.
Yeah. And by the way, Asa in Vancouver sent this along and said, with regards to your observation as to if the Canadians want the pipeline so bad, why don't they run it across their own country? Well, here's the thing. There is a northern chapter of the pipeline called the Northern Gateway Pipeline, and unlike you guys, we didn't have a leader to oppose it. It is by God being built, even as we speak. Keystone XL is just a redundant pipeline, so the zombies can rake in the cash and poison us out of existence at twice the pace.
Well, there's already, I think, like 10 pipelines that are active already that are being upgraded. You know, they're running another pipe beside it because they don't have to get international approval for that. They run another pipe beside it that's way bigger that will replace the other pipe.
Yeah.
So, Keystone XL is more symbolic than, you know what I mean.
Yeah.
Because, it's going to get there one way or another. I don't think we're going to stop it unless we can, stop it from being burnt.
Oh, Jesus.
Which the EU is working on banning anything derived from tar sands from entering the EU. So, that at least helps a little bit, but
I differ. I differ. That doesn't make a damn bit of difference because it's all going to China anyway.
Well,
We did the Trans-Alaska pipeline for Japan. We're going to do this for China.
Well, here's the thing, though. If this goes to the East Coast, Europe is a beneficial, market for them because, it's a shorter trip. If KXL is stopped, if they have to build across to, Nova Scotia and
right.
build refineries up there. Although in a few years it won't matter because they'll be able to ship it, up over the Arctic. It'll be ice free.
Well, there's that, isn't there?
So it won't be a problem. Yeah, Captain Hudson would be really, really happy with the present developments.
Yeah, that whole Northwest Passage thing. By the way, I guess the world is still waiting to hear what the grand jury is going to do in Ferguson. And what I've been able to see through the magic of the interweb tubes, the for-profit media are having an absolute hissy, anticipating, hell yawning open.
Yes, They canceled school for the first 2 days of the week, which were the only days for, you know, Thanksgiving week.
Oh, and a little clarification here coming in from Ron. Devin had the correct excuse, but the wrong place. Keeping the dust down was the excuse industry used here. Dioxin was used as a coolant for electrical motors. So, I mean, and where West Virginia is concerned, just a minute. Okay, so we are putting radioactive waste in our unlined landfills, and lined ones too, for that matter. And now we're going to spray arguably at least somewhat radioactive waste water, brine, on our highways. I don't look good in green.
It's full of all sorts of solvents.
Right, that are proprietary in nature, because, you know, it'd be bad for business if we were to let people know what was in the fracking.
A significant portion of it is diesel fuel, and other fuel oil or distillates of some sort, stuff that you wouldn't even put in an oil burner furnace, you know, that kind of stuff. You just put whatever in there. You know, anything that's left over or you want to get rid of, you just pump it down the hole.
Right.
And then you spray it on the road. And, you know, these deer hunters ought to be getting pissed off about this because, you know, the deer go out there and, you know, they lick the roads when the saltiness is there, so...
Oh, the deer will be—they'll be dancing chorus lines in the middle of the roads.
Oh yeah, and you know the ones that don't, you know, lose all their hair and die, will subsequently be eaten by people, and then they'll lose all their hair and die.
Nice, just nice. Well, Devin, we will talk soon, and we'll. We'll wrap this up so that Sparky can get the bat signal up and get the gang gathered together.
Yeah, and sorry, everybody, for ruining the filibobster.
Oh, you didn't ruin it at all. Ruin it at all. It was fun.
Catch you in a few.
All right. See you, Devin. Bye. Our buddy Devin from Points Elsewhere here in West by Cold, Virginia. There is a lot of stuff to... that's like I said, we kind of started at the, that didn't take long. So we've got Tucker Carlson, Steve Doocy, and the Attack Blonde, and Charles Krauthammer's hissy. Gosh, I wonder if anybody else had a hissy. I wonder if maybe, apart from having a fit over, say, the President of the United States quoting a passage from the Bible, how dare he and him being a Muslim. I wonder if anybody took it, could he ever even possibly top that? Well, yes. This actually goes back to last week. The Secretary of State of Kansas stand, hi Diane, is Chris Kobach. And he's odious, to say the least. But he understands what immigration really means. He knows what's coming. Absolutely.
What happens if you know your history when one culture or one race or one religion overwhelms another culture or race? What happens?
Well, it depends on what you mean by overwhelms.
Well,
if it's,
in numbers. This is what La Raza knows and the other Hispanic rights groups that are actually calling for the return of the Spanish territory, which could be almost half the United States. When Saudi Arabia, no Christians in a Saudi Arabia, just the Muslims, Arabian sect. Bosnia, they're ethnic cleansing in Lebanon right now. Egypt, did I just mention Bosnia? When one race or culture overwhelms another culture, they run them out or they kill them. And it's a bigger issue than just being Democrats. And they know in numbers, once the numbers are so vast, there's no, they can pretty much do whatever they want to do.
Well, and here's an interesting, not a counterpoint, but an interesting additional point to that, I guess. you know, what protects us in America from any kind of ethnic cleansing is the rule of law, of course. And the rule of law used to be unassailable, used to be taken for granted in America.
Really?
And now, of course, we have a president who...
Wait. I just want to be clear. The rule of law used to be unassailable in the United States of America, you know, back when Nixon was president. You know, the rule of law was unassailable. It was irrelevant to Richard Nixon. Or then, you know, there's St. Ronnie of Raygun, for whom the rule of law was next to meaningless when it came to selling arms in exchange to the Iranians in exchange for hostages and using the proceeds from that to fund a gang of right-wing terrorists in Nicaragua and El Salvador. Yeah, that's some rule of law, all right.
Disregards the law when it suits his interests. And so, you know, while I normally would answer that by saying, Steve, you know, of course we have the rule of law, that could never happen in America, I wonder what can happen. I still don't think it's going to happen in America, but I have to admit that things are strange and they're happening.
What
happens?
Go away. So a Hispanic minority is going to ethnic cleanse all the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing Christian white people. Yeah. Charming, aren't they? And then, we haven't run anything from him in rather a while, but, you know, Michael the Savage Wiener is always good for an immigrant hissy fit. You'll love this. Wait, what time is it? Okay, it's 7:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time here, so we'll just keep an eye on things.
Obama is not breaking the law. He says he's making the law. He actually is not even saying he's making the law. He's just doing it, that's all, and feels good doing it. I mean, isn't it the adage of the libs? If it feels good, do it. So it feels good to him to grant amnesty to illegals. Now, they're not calling it amnesty. It's called something else. I get it. But the fact is that he's in a long line of others who have taken the law into themselves and said they're not taking the law into themselves. Others who have said they're acting within the law when they're acting clearly outside of the law. I don't know of a single dictator who has ever done anything where they said we're doing it, we're breaking the law. When Hitler invaded a neighboring country, he said he was simply taking back German land on the Lebensraum, living room. I mean, you may have a living room in your house, which they now call the great room, but Hitler wasn't happy with the great room that he got there in Munich, and he wanted more living room.
What?
His house needed a bigger living room, so he took a neighbor's country away, that's all. But he didn't do it illegally. He said he was doing it perfectly legally, like Obama. Obama is not breaking the law.
Okay, so in the evenings, pool, who had 7:02 p.m. Eastern Standard Time for the first mention of the little guy who looked a lot like Charlie Chaplin? I got to tell you, Sparky, it's going to come in handy. This is the cowbell with a million uses. Mm-hmm. And, okay, so... they're pretty nutty. They're pretty nutty. But I think we have to award the loopiest response award to convicted felon Dinesh D'Souza. No, really. This one's for the ages.
He's given a lot of reasons for what he did. Do you believe one of the reasons is that he has contempt for the American people?
I think so. I think that what we are seeing now is essentially, you could call it the behavior of an extremely spoiled brat. Obama, who I think has been a spoiled brat since he was two, has certainly...
You know, because Dinesh D'Souza was there. Really. He just called the President of the United States a spoiled brat. Now, this is a guy who was president of some little comedy college in Manhattan but got bounced out on his ear when it turned out his family values weren't quite up to snuff because he was having an affair on his wife while he was preaching family values. I don't know. Spoiled brat? Take one to no one? Is that what we're talking about here?
He's been a political spoiled brat, and by that I mean he's not totally to blame for that, because the media is partly to blame. They're the ones who've been spoiling him by not holding him to account. So as a consequence...
Huh? Are we talking about the same media?
Consequence of it, Obama basically thinks, I can get away with it. I can be a wolf because the media...
No, Dinesh, he's not. Wolverines! Not Wolof. Wolverine. Poor guy's just behind the curve.
Yeah, he's like sheep. And so he's been doing this, and now that suddenly the American people are waking up, calling him to account, he becomes, like any spoiled kid, irritable, and he basically goes, well, the heck with you then. I'm not going to work with you. If you're going to spoil my party, I'm just going to break the toys, and I'm just going to do whatever the heck I want, and I'm going to see whether you spank me or not.
Really, Dinesh? You're having spanking fantasies about Barack Obama? Spanking fantasies? Oh, you couldn't pay to have this stuff written. Dinesh D'Souza wants to spank Barack Obama. And then spank Zoot. Naughty Zoot.
And the big question is, will the Republicans now do what is needed and spank him?
Yes. He needs a spanking. A very good spanking. Unfortunately, it might be hard to get the Republicans to spank him because it's my understanding they're the ones who like to go to get the spankings. It hurts. It just hurts. Are you completely consumed by all of this now? Has the stupid overwhelmed you? One more.
What happened?
Oh, no. That was... No. We had that one already. Why not? It's Friday on the front porch, right? Why not a little something-something from... Or maybe it's not going to load. I think our friends at Right Wing Watch have been getting hammered by the right wing for a while lately. It's kind of hard to bring their stuff up from time to time. Republican spanking fantasies. Well, at least it's Friday. Right? Yeah. So let's take a little break here. And Sparky says they're ready to go with the Extraordinary Ordinary Roundtable via the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. So we will fire that up momentarily. We've already got someone on the Gizmo line. This is listener-supported conversation radio, and I want to extend thanks to Eric. Thank you very kindly, Eric. Eric jumped right out there and met Dr. John's challenge. That means we are two-thirds done with fundraising for the evening, and hopefully, anybody want to meet up with what Eric did, and that'll push us up to 150 for the evening. Or, you know, $10 at a time, $5 at a time, whatever. However you are able to help, not that you have to. And we never ask anybody to do themselves any harm or denial in helping support keeping the community going. Thank you, Eric. Thank you very much, and thank you to Dr. John for making the challenge this evening. We will we'll take this break, and we'll fire up the Horn Molloy Skype chat group for Friday on the Front Porch. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Ow! Let's just go down with a free ball to the spank. Hit it! Ah!
Working man in show business, James Brown, which immediately engendered an email from Ron and Raleigh. Hit me! I had to break out my platform shoes, bell bottoms, and my velvet cape. Hit me, Maceo! It just seemed perfect. I mean, you don't have stories out there just every day where one of those right wing supposed intellectuals talks about wanting to get down and spank on the president. Woo! Hot times in Dinesh Town. And we've got the Horn Molloy Skype chat group all fired up, and we've got the Gizmo line all fired up. Let's check out the Gizmo line first. Hey, welcome to the program.
Who else?
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Man, if I knew that, I'd be there. You know, that's the old joke that I always used. But I think I'm somewhere where it's going to happen soon with this group of people.
Indeed, indeed, indeed. And You had to be enjoying the James Brown there, weren't you?
Absolutely. Of course, I also once upon a time enjoyed shaking hands with a man named Jimmy Brown in 1958, I think it was.
Yes, not to be confused one with the other. All right, let's say good evening to the Horn Malloy Skype chat group. Good evening, Sparky.
Good evening, Bob.
How's the cowbell sounding over the air?
It sounds great. I thought you were going to cut Christopher Walken.
I've already got it. Ron and Raleigh has sent it along, asking it shall be given unto you.
Oh, okay. Did you also notice the little wiener whistle?
Yes, I did. Taped to the razor box. I've been working on my rendition of If I Was an Oscar Mayer Wiener.
Yeah, I didn't want it to get lost in all the shreds that were in there.
Nope, it was right there.
I wanted to make sure it was all packed real good, as the cowbell was too. But anyway, I got my man cave hooked up with a Wi-Fi extender now.
Oh, cool.
And I just got a new laptop computer for my stepson.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been setting it up for him, using it and getting all the updates because it's a Windows 7 model.
Yeah.
And once you plug it in, it starts looking for updates. And it's like I had 98 updates to do last night with it.
Holy cow. So is it all ready to go now?
Well, yeah, I got the Horn chat on it. I finally got through my Java issues.
Excellent. Let's see, who else do we have here? John, is that you?
Oh, hey, Bob.
Welcome to the gang. Good evening.
Thanks, man.
And Roger's with us this evening. Good evening, Roger.
Yeah, I'm working on repairing window screens down in the garage, so basically I'm going to lurk for a while, but I got some notes written down for crap I want to bring up later.
Okay. Well, don't sell yourself short. I don't think it's crap.
No, it's not crap.
And good evening, Jeremy in Vermont.
Good evening, Bob. I'll probably be lurking for a while, too, but I'll be here.
Okay. Cool. And Sergi is with us from Funky Town.
Hello, Bob. Am I coming through okay?
You're golden.
Okay. Yeah. That is how Fort Worth got that nickname, and it's actually kind of true to this day. There's, if you go to some of the more industrial parts of town, you know, basically smells like, you know, a giant, you know, kneeled over the city and farted. It was just lovely.
Charming. Charming. And let's see, are you with us, Jay Cruzen?
Yeah.
Welcome.
Unmute. Hey, hello. Sitting here eating, though, so might be a minute on.
No worries. No worries. What's for dinner?
About a 2-pound baked potato with sour cream, chives, cheese, sautéed onions, you know.
Oh, glory.
Yummy, yummy.
Yeah. Oh, man, that sounds like a dandy.
And lots of pepper.
Oh, very nice. Very nice indeed. And, of course, Devin is back with us. Or is he? He's
not
connecting.
Yet. Not yet, Bob. Yeah.
We've got a good little group. Other people, if you'd like to jump in, feel free. I did have a note from Harry earlier this evening, and he said, after your extraordinarily complimentary words last week, I feel a little guilty about not trying to participate in the Skype group on Friday on the front porch, but I am always trying to learn new things about computers. I have not yet genuinely come to any conclusions as to why my Skype connection was so unsteady and frail last Friday night, although one of my theories is that I need to be hooked up to a DSL modem directly, which would be possible for me to do. I'm not sure if that's the real issue, because the wireless router is literally about 20 feet from my laptop when I listen to your program. But since, for example, Roger seems to have no trouble being in the group while he's outside doing work on his vegetables, I'm hesitant to conclude that the problem is merely the fact that I'm using a wireless signal. I don't think it is. And the signal connection last Friday never wavered from being excellent, even though there were a few times when I was close to being disconnected. And one time where I was, although Sparky was gracious enough to send me a new signal so that I could rejoin the group connection. So I suspect there may be another factor that I simply have not yet discovered, and it's quite possible that my laptop's CPU or graphics card is just a little too old to sustain a solid Skype connection. If that turns out to be true, I do have one secret weapon. As I may once have told you, young people in my D.C. apartment building were scandalously cavalier about throwing out all kinds of consumer products, including computers. And someone once threw out a more media-oriented HP laptop. It didn't work, but my intuition told me that the only problem might be a damaged power cord. So, in short, Harry is working on getting back with us. Warmest regards in absentia to all of the lovely and caring people who have somehow found their way to this fragile little internet community of progressive values that you've patiently nurtured for the last 8 years. I can only attest to the last 2 or 3 years, but I have no doubt that your behavior has been consistently nurturing. Well, you know, with the occasional hissy thrown in for good measure, but thank you very kindly, Harry. Your words mean a great deal. By the way, Marty, J. Cruz, and you'll be interested to know, Marty just said that baked potato is causing my arteries to harden just hearing about it. And I don't necessarily think that's a bad thing. You know, sometimes yummy, you know, what do the French say? Fat is flavor? There we go.
Well, now, I mean, baked potatoes aren't that bad for you.
No, but the cheese and the sour cream and the I think that's where Marty's going.
Jason's still young, man.
Well, yeah.
Has Marty caught wind of my recipe yet?
I think he's about to, Sergi.
Yeah, you want artery hardening?
Lay it on.
I can send them the, because you know it has so many ingredients that I can never remember them all off the top of my head, and I don't have the file handy. But you know, basically, this recipe, which I can't claim credit to it. It was actually someone I used to know who came up with it, but I just kind of enhanced it a little bit more for my own purposes since, and I added a few more ingredients. And, you know, basically it was the result of, you know, having a bunch of food in the kitchen that constitutes ingredients but not full meals in themselves. So, just, you know, combined it all into one big drum. Cooked it up. I'm not sure how many people out, you know, listening are fans of Mama's Family, but, you know, there's this gag where Naomi was making chili, and she put beer nuts and Fritos and, SpaghettiOs and all sorts. You know, she literally dumped a can of SpaghettiOs in her chili.
That almost sounds like Cincinnati chili.
And Thelma looks over at her and just, you know, Vicky Lawrence is a comedic genius. You know, Thelma looks at her and says, "What's the next ingredient, Naomi? Penicillin?" And so basically, you know, on her drum.
Naming potential, Sergi. How about Tub of Supper?
Tub of Supper, that's a good one. Or, you know, just Sergi's, you know, Sergi's International, you know, Sergi's International Slop in a Drum or something. But basically, you start off with chili, and you dump in a pound of Velveeta, and one or two whole onions, a whole pack of bacon.
Wait, a whole onion? You don't chop the onion?
Well, we chop the onions, okay. But I mean a whole onion's worth of chopped onion.
Okay.
And you add, you know, your average 1 pound thing of bacon and ham chopped up and, let me see what else is in there. Sour cream and barbecue sauce and chopped up hot dogs, chopped up hot links, a bunch of other stuff. I'm going to see if I can find the recipe while I'm here, but you know it's great. It tastes great. It doesn't look that appetizing, but it tastes great, and it, you know, you'll gain weight just by looking at it. But it's good.
Hey, by the way, a note coming in from Diane. She says about the Kobach lunatic. You know, he's the one that thinks there's going to be ethnic cleansing of all the good God-fearing, Bible-believing, upstanding Christian white people. by the Mexican majority. Diane says, Kansas's population is aging, and I've read that the young are leaving the rural communities never to return. One might reasonably think that Kansas needs an infusion of people from elsewhere. I wonder if Kobach simply wants us to wither on the vine without an infusion of new life and vitality. Yes. Signed, Diane in You-Know-Where. Oh, and by the way, the football team from You-Know-Where put a serious smackdown on the Mountaineers last night, for anyone who wasn't aware of that. It was a home game for us in Morgantown. You would have thought we were playing in Manhattan, Kansas, the way the refs called the game.
I had to stop watching it, Bob. I had to watch the Raiders.
Did they win?
Yeah.
I'll be dipped.
Yeah, for a change.
Do you remember I sent you the message your quarterback was a Jesus freak?
Oh, yeah.
I thought, oh, no, not another, what's his name?
Tebow.
Yeah, oh. This kid's from Fresno State. His brother played a car.
Oh, yeah. And he's
anyway, he got interviewed as soon as the game was over, and he started, you know, praise to Jesus and all this stuff.
Yeah, what? Thank you, Jesus, we're 1-10.
We finally won, and then Woodson was on the interview.
Oh, God.
You know, the owner of that team of Oakland, the guy that passed away?
Al Davis.
His son.
Yeah. Pardon?
No, go ahead.
Well, anyway, he went to high school in Brooklyn with Art Modell, the guy that bought the Browns in the late 50s. And he fired Paul because, after all, Paul was just the general manager for all the years that the Browns kept winning the Eastern Division title, you know. And so he fired Paul. And when he fired him, there was a newspaper strike here, and we were working in sub-zero temperatures. And that's one of the reasons Art always had a bunch of people that couldn't stand him. But he did, to bless the man's name, he gave away tons of money to the Cleveland Clinic and other places like that. But, yeah, those two guys knew each other in high school. Those two boss men, you know.
Hey, Joe, I didn't know you were going to jump into the time machine. I thought we were talking about today.
Oh, no. With sports with me, the NFL is just one long stream of things that I have. When I moved one time, I had to throw away a box of the football magazines that came out every July, because I was really aware of that sport, because when I was 11, the Indians went out and lost the World Series in four straight. Did you guys ever see the catch Willie Mays made in that series?
Oh, yeah.
It was
the over the shoulder?
Yeah. And I, of course, was an Indians fan of 11 years of age at the time, and yeah, stick the knife in me, you know. So then Paul Brown came out to the school I was going to, and he bought Graham and Lavelli and Groza. You know, he bought four future Hall of Famers, and that changed me around. I became a football fan more than baseball, you know. And then eventually, when you could walk to the arena and watch hockey, when the National League only had six teams, the American League was full of talent. And by the way, they had Then the Europeans have come into that game, and it's totally different, too. But anyway, I'll get off of that subject, because there's more important things to yak about.
No worries. I didn't. But, are the Raiders in any kind of jeopardy of blowing their first-round draft pick?
I don't think so.
No, absolutely not. I think they got that one locked up.
Is anybody close to their record?
Of course, I could have probably phrased that a little bit better.
Well, I can't believe they won a game. I'm going to have to go verify that.
The NFL lives on that.
I watched it last night, Jason. I can verify it.
Yeah, I know. I'm being facetious, but you know, like I said.
And it was in the rain, too.
Oh, well, that's why they won. They love the bad weather.
Did the Steelers play last night?
No. No, it was just Raiders and the Kansas City Chiefs.
Yeah, I'm just kidding.
And then Bob's team with the white ugly helmets. And...
Oh, they're not that bad.
What is with all the uniform changes and the helmet changes?
Oh, that's the evil geniuses at Nike completely screwing with people's football traditions.
It seems like there's a bunch of teams that do it.
Well, the Browns have semi-new uniforms. Of course, they wore a very plain uniform anyhow.
No, they're basically the same uniform, Bill.
I think they're just doing throwback uniforms, aren't they? Aren't these like replicas of the real old uniforms from way back?
Green Bay did that over the weekend.
Pittsburgh did it a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
Well, the great thing about Green Bay is when they were talking about moving them back in the 50s, the townspeople bought stock, and they own. The Green Bay townspeople own that franchise.
Yeah, and it was also started by the meatpacking industry, which is why... Meatpacking Union, I'm sorry. That's why they're called the Packers.
Oh, cool. Well, Lombardi was the guy. Lombardi and the guy that coached the Dallas Cowboys in the beginning, they both were working for the New York Giants, and one of their primary jobs was to shadow Paul Brown. Just watch what this guy was doing. And Chuck Noll, I met him at a department store one time, and he was a guy who carried in plays, and, Pittsburgh had never done anything until Noll took over the reins. But I always said, if Paul Brown's standing there and giving you plays to carry in, and when Arthur Graham is getting plays handed to him by the coach, that was an interesting facet, too. But I get off the damn sports because it's too easy to get hooked up on those.
And
it's not sports anymore, it's business anyhow, you know?
Well, that yeah.
And that could include colleges, Bob.
Oh, well, no, huge, huge business.
That was a big scandal in the 50s. The guys getting paid outright. And, of course, we know that they're coming out of there with sterling educations and the ability to do it. What was it? One guy that played for Washington was functionally illiterate, Bob, at one time.
I think there's... That would be one of those which one kind of situations.
Yeah.
Hey, Bob.
Yeah.
Did you just see what Stockton Larry, a.k.a. Irish Dave, just posted in the chat room?
Well, that's why I said I probably could have phrased that a little bit better. Yeah.
Oh, that made me laugh.
I knew I was screwing up.
Well, I couldn't finish my baked potato. I wasn't kidding when I said it was 2 pounds. I didn't even plan on buying a potato when I went to the grocery store the other day, but I was walking through Publix and I saw the biggest potato I've ever seen. So I had to pick it up.
Well, save some for later and eat it later.
There's still a whole potato sitting here on the coffee table in front of me. I can't believe it.
I'm still trying to find that recipe because I really want to share it.
Well, I just rolled in, literally, and so I don't know what the discussion's about. So,
hi, Larry.
Hi there.
It's all over the place, Larry.
Okay, yeah. I was just wondering. We live in a culture that throws a lot of technology away and wastes things like there's no tomorrow. Like, tomorrow will never come. So I'm wondering what happened during the Depression or what people do, like, in Appalachia or in places where you don't have access to all of these things and how you make do and how you adjust and how the rest of the society might adjust to a world in which we suddenly don't have an economy that makes all this technological stuff, and people have to make do with what they have. Because I don't think
I can actually kind of answer your question there, Larry. Anyone who has not read the book, The City of Ember, really should. It is a very good book. Read the book before seeing the movie, because the movie sucks. Basically, the premise is that Ember is a post-apocalyptic survival city, basically. The United States and a generic, you know, terrorist enemy nation, Jean Dupro deliberately avoided using any real life nations. So this is, you know, the terrorists, the enemy, you know, they're referred to in the sequel, The Prophet of Yanwood. But the City of Ember was built underground by the U.S. government in actually Northern California, believe it or not. And the premise of the book is that it starts out 250 years after that city was first inhabited, and you know the wars and diseases and such have long since cleansed the surface. And they were supposed to leave the city after 200 years, but a bunch of mishaps led to that not quite working out the way that it was supposed to. And the way that the Emberites eventually, you know, had to do things is that they had to become vigilant recyclers. By the time year 250 rolls around, there is, you know, nothing being thrown away, hardly. You know, they reuse everything because they were put down there without knowledge of how to actually build things or how to actually, you know, use resources, what little they had underground. And so everything was built for them, and everything was provided for them, but things will eventually break down. And so they had to become vigilant recyclers, and they would have, you know, their own citizens had to pick through their landfill and, you know, oh, this broken table leg could be used to fit something, or this, you know, piece of, you know, electrical wiring could be used to repair someone's refrigerator, you know. And they basically had to become, and, you know, we're on the path to where we will have to become a lot more vigilant about recycling everything if we have any hope of staying a technological society.
Sergi, whereabouts in Northern California were these people?
It's never directly specified, but according to the people of Sparks, just estimating, because it takes Lina, Casper, and Maddie about, I think it was 2 weeks to eventually reach. And they were going to the southwest from the northeast, the direction. And it took them about 2 weeks on foot, but they were using a horse-drawn cart to reach the ruins of San Francisco. So somewhere probably near where the Oregon border or somewhere up there.
Oh, because you ever read the legend of the Lemurians that live in Mount Shasta?
No, I've never heard of such.
I'll have to share it with you later. Mystic people. And then there's Indian legends about the mountain also.
Isn't it funny how the legends always wind up being about mountains and never about flat places?
Well, there ain't no place to hide in a flat place.
Well, I think flat land just doesn't speak to our ambitions, our imaginations.
Well, when Ferg was here, I showed him a picture of Mount Shasta, and I pointed out the legend of the Wintu sun god on the mountain. That you can see, I mean, you have to be on the south side looking at it from a certain angle. and you can see her. She looks like a Indian maiden laying back with her arms back and looking to the sun.
Wow. Oh, oops, I was mistaken. I was actually rereading the book earlier, the People of Sparks, which is the sequel to the City of Ember. I was mistaken. It was just 5 days via a slow horse drawn cart. So yeah, somewhere northeast of San Francisco.
Well, that could be Mount Shasta area.
Up
in the Redwood Forest where Roger lives.
When the people leave the city, they come out on the side of a steep hill, so it was probably somewhere around Mount Shasta. It was not a mountain, because the people of Ember come out and they had never, witnessed snow before, so it, couldn't have really been a big mountain that they came out of, but it was built into the side of a hill, and the old entrance, and so it was probably somewhere around the hilly regions or whatever, mountainous regions of Northern California. And also the city itself was built to withstand direct on the surface nuclear hits, because that was the fear of the builders, the builders in the U.S. government, was that that a nuclear war was approaching, and sure enough, it was.
Well, I've never heard any legends like that around here, but the Scientologists down in the neighborhood of a place called Petrolia have burrowed into the hillside and created a doomsday compound, and I've actually talked to some of the construction workers that helped build it, and it's still in existence.
Oh, that's kind of wild.
Want to talk about wild? I saw a deal on TV a while back. There's a it looks like an old night missile base north of Travis, somewhere in Vacaville. These people built a mansion on a property, and they're trying to sell the whole thing. And they were showing the old missile bays and all that shit you could go into.
The amount of money this government spent on making those hardened underground intercontinental ballistic missile silos all over the western United States is unbelievable.
Well, we had to keep them Ruskas at bay. We didn't want them taking over and making us all communistical like. Now we can't allow that to happen.
Well, like six to 10 foot thick cement doors, 100 feet underground, and a completely self-contained city. Well, city, 30-40 people living in it. 24-hour a day manning it with the antennas above the ground, trying to hide from the surrounding area. It's just unbelievable waste of money.
Well, some of you are going to cringe, but the Back to the Land movement, some of you have lived on the land your whole lives and sort of bristle at any kind of romanticism of back to the land. But there was the movement would write these books in the 70s, like Muddling Through Frugality, because they were envisioning this consumerist, this idea that we live in this consumer society where everything is based upon consumption and wasting, and that we needed to get away from that. So without romanticizing it and without talking in terms of some futuristic science fiction notion of what it would be like, do you think that this country would eventually crash, and then, or if it hasn't done it already, and that people would adjust to living in a society without having a lot of consumer goods or cell phones or computers or TVs or any of that stuff?
It's coming.
What I think is inevitable.
No, I was just going to say there was breaking news this afternoon, and there was much hissifying on the for-profit media about it. This national security announcement that was made by one of our high brass individuals who said that it's not a matter of if, but when Chinese hackers take down the entire power grid. Anybody hear that?
Not me.
Yeah, I'm hearing rumors, you know.
I mean, this was not lately. This was very breathlessly reported just this afternoon.
You mean our number one trading partner is going to do that? Oh my!
That means I get a vacation.
No, the other side of it is.
The other side of it is: to what benefit is it of China to take down the power grid?
Why would they
there
want to
is none. China ain't going to do nothing to us because we're intertwined economically.
Yeah,
China,
I mean,
and the United States is intertwined economically. So
there's
we
no
ain't
benefit
do to them, and they ain't going to do nothing to us.
There's no benefit to China to take down the U.S. power grid.
It's
absolutely none.
It's going to be Christmas time. This is when China that makes out big with selling this shit.
Well, they've already sold the shit. Now it's up to
you
got to
have your shit.
Us.
I mean, everybody's working on Thanksgiving now. I mean, that's got to suck. Who the hell is so sick they got to go out and shop on Thanksgiving?
I'm completely divorced from being able to get my head around that kind of behavior.
Well, it's
my older sister.
Have no life.
Well, I can't take a pass on working on Thanksgiving.
You're doing something essential to, you know, you're keeping the power grid up. You know, it's, you know, what you do is different than somebody, you know, ringing up your new flat screen TV. You know.
Oh yeah, I agree.
Yeah. Plus, you're getting double time, right?
The only shop I'm going to do on Thanksgiving is I run out of beer.
Yeah.
So here's the story via CNN. They write, and let's give credit where credit is due. Jamie Crawford, national security producer, writes, China and probably one or two other countries have the capacity to shut down the nation's power grid and other critical infrastructure through a cyber attack, the head of the National Security Agency told a congressional panel Thursday. Admiral Michael Rogers, who also serves the dual role as head of the U.S. Cyber Command, said the United States has detected malware from China and elsewhere on U.S. computer systems that affect the daily lives of every American. It enables you to shut down very segmented, very tailored parts of our infrastructure that forestall the ability to provide that service to us as citizens. He said such attacks are the coming trends he sees based on reconnaissance taking place in that nation states or other actors may use to exploit vulnerabilities in U.S. cyber systems. I find it interesting that this comes out at the same time that Anonymous is out there taking down the Klan clowns.
Yeah, and the LSD is going to be put in every water supply of every major city in the country from the 1970s.
Oh yeah.
Yes.
Meanwhile, the most successful organization to poison a municipality or a region's water supply remains, you know, a corporation.
Yeah, the water company.
Notice the wording in that news story. Quote, has the capacity, end quote.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they may have the capacity, but they ain't going to do it. They know who butters their bread. They're not going to do it.
Maybe some terrorist hacker group or whatever, but I'll be honest with you, that doesn't worry me so much because it would take us all of, you know, maybe a day at the most to restore the whole damn thing manually without any computers.
You're optimistic.
No, I'm realistic. If it's just taken down, then you just disconnect the computers from the whole damn thing. The computers don't have anything to do with it. It all runs mechanically.
Here's a fun little paragraph. The testimony also comes in the wake of a report from the Pew Internet and American Life Project that cited a prediction by technology experts that a catastrophic cyber attack that causes significant losses in life and financial damage would occur by 2025.
And precious bodily fluids, Mandrake.
Fluoride, Mandrake, in little children's ice cream.
Well, on the topic of Thanksgiving, if I don't want to celebrate Thanksgiving from the point of view of celebrating the Pilgrims or the Puritans' conquest of and genocide of Native Americans, is there an alternative way to appreciate the holiday?
Yes, just use it to give thanks. That's okay. Don't mind the Puritans. It's a holiday to give thanks and to, you know, to eat yourself silly, and have leftovers that'll make it a Christmas.
I'm a little sketchy about the give thanks line, Sergi, because most people take that from some sort of theistic or deistic aspect. I like to think of it as expressing gratitude to one's friends, family, community, the people who, you know, the people we love and the people who love us back.
That's pretty much what I meant. You know,
in my family, it's just a rehearsal for Christmas, getting the family together, and you know, we only have a couple of days, and in another month we'll have a week together. So this is just practice for a month from now.
Okay.
Well, it was a time when it was a day to really eat. I mean, back in the day when people didn't have us, I mean, cooking a turkey in the years ago was a, well, it was an art form from what I can remember of getting those birds cooked correctly. And all the trimmings to go with the things you don't normally eat, like, give me a can of black olives, you know? I mean, well, I, of course, don't eat those every day, you know? It was a family day, really, is all it was at best.
Yeah, I mean, I will do, and as far as I can tell, I think our dressing recipe is approaching 100 years old at the very least. And it's simple.
Oh,
it's simple and it's delicious. And no, we never stuff the bird. I think that's disgusting. And it's also a great way to get very, very sick. I'll use cornbread and loaf, you know, plain old white bread and some biscuits and some French bread. And when you think about it, it's kind of within the oldie English sense of the word, it's a pudding of sorts. It's a bread pudding, only instead of being sweet with a bourbon sauce and raisins like bread pudding for dessert is, it's a bread pudding that is savory and spicy. And without fail, I have to make like three pans of the stuff because it gets more attention than the turkey does.
Yeah, my wife makes one that she got from her mother that you would drool all over, Bob.
Speaking of turkey, I live on the West Coast and it's still light here. A turkey vulture just landed in the tree across the street.
Oh, turkey buzzard? They're turkey buzzards here.
Well, we call them turkey vultures.
Get out your shotgun.
No, you don't want to eat that thing. You don't want to shoot them either because they're nature's cleaner uppers.
Garbage, yeah.
I want to jump back to something that Larry asked about a little while ago. Back in about 1968, when I had an apartment in San Francisco and was still in the service and all that, I bought some ice cream, put it in the little freezer compartment of my refrigerator in my apartment, and I came home from work and it was all melted. And I went to the management and said, man, you know, my ice cream defrosted. Oh, well, we defrost all the refrigerators in the entire apartment house every Thursday. So you don't want to do that. And you folks that live in the city in apartments, if we hit another depression, are fucked. There's no other way to say it. You're fucked.
Why?
Because when the grocery stores don't have any food, and the electricity becomes too expensive, and all the rest of it, they've got no way to live. Where I am, I mean, I've got food in jars stored away. I got food in the freezer stored away. I've got a generator that I can use to keep my freezers going, and you know, all the rest of that stuff. And in a sense, I'm prepared for a problem because I was raised by parents who went through the Depression and instilled in me, you need to be self-sufficient. And you know, like my tractors, they're a gravity feed carburetor. The electronics is a distributor and a battery and spark plugs. There are things that I'm going to be able to do to sustain my life that if I were living in that apartment like I was back in 68 in San Francisco and the shit hit the fan, I'd be screwed. And I'm not in the city living in an apartment. And our population has gotten so big. And I think the reason that the revolution didn't happen during the Depression is that so much of our population still lived on farms and could grow their own vegetables, could raise some of their own meat, they could barter with their neighbors, and you know, they could continue to exist. But when you have cities of millions of people that are dependent on the Safeway truck coming in every day and delivering groceries to the store, when those trucks can't run anymore, or the agribusiness farms, because of droughts and things like that, can't produce anymore, it's going to be a serious problem.
Well, I have to agree with you, Roger, but there's one other thing I have to inform you of, is that you're going down with us.
Oh, there's no doubt I'm going to go down with you.
Unless you got a bunch of guns and a bunch of bullets.
Well, I have that. I have that, too, but I don't want to use them.
They're going to come out of the city, and they're going to take your shit.
Well, some of them are going to die before I die.
I understand. There was I think it was Argentina, I want to say. I want to say it was Argentina that went through a major, you know, economic crisis a little over 10 years ago. And there's a big culture of survivalists down there before that happened, who thought that they were being smart by moving out of the cities and getting on these plots of land and arming themselves to the teeth and, you know, everything like that. Ironically enough, order was restored in the cities quite fast, and the cities recovered quite fast, and a good number of all those survivalists were found murdered and robbed. So that's just a little bit of irony there.
Yeah, well, I don't consider myself a survivalist in any way, shape, or form.
I think Roger, what you're pointing to is something that I've alluded to in the past, and that is that most people do not consider exactly how precariously perched, how fragile, in fact, what passes for our civilization is.
All it takes is the lights going out.
Sergey just gave me a nightmare of them green double X flags coming at me.
Green double X flags? Are those the state of Jefferson?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, I've never seen a state of Jefferson flag, so I have to use
that. Oh, look it up on the internet. It's almost as bad as a snake flag.
And Roger, I wouldn't, you know, I don't want to, I didn't mean to call you a survivalist. I was just, you know, making a point about people who think that they're being smart by, you know, arming themselves. Oh yeah, I'm gonna arm myself, and ain't no one gonna take my food. It's like, if there's enough of them, they will overwhelm you.
And that is absolute stupidity. But our local Safeway store just moved to a new building. The old Safeway store, in the back, they stored enough food in the back of the canned goods and the rest of that kind of stuff that when the roads get wiped out by a flood or anything else, they could keep, in essence, survival food on the shelf for about 3 to 5 days, something like that. You know, the pork and beans and the Denny Moore beef stew and, you know, cases of that kind of stuff. They've moved to a new store, and they are dependent on three trucks a day coming up from the Bay Area to resupply the store. There is no backup in the store because the economics is it's better off to simply resupply what they sell every day with a new delivery the next day. And yeah, that's the kind of thing I'm talking about, is that, and I'm up here in Humboldt County. I mean, we're almost 300 miles from San Francisco, 272 depending on what sign you read. But they're getting deliveries every single day because the corporations are squeezing every last inch of profit. And if they don't have to keep it on their warehouse for 2 weeks before they deliver it, they only have to keep it for 2 days before they deliver it, it makes them more profit. So we're only 1 or 2 days away. If we have another flood like we had in 55 and 64, where the roads were gone for like 2 weeks, and they actually brought military ships in with sea rations and were passing sea rations out to people because we ran out of food after a week and a half, today it's a day and a half we're going to run out of food. And when you've got 50, 60, 80,000 people that are hungry, you've got a problem.
You've got a riot.
Yep.
It's like that saying goes, 3 days till anarchy.
Yeah.
It used to be, like back in the 50s, that grocery stores, they had to have within ready access, either on the premises of the store or, you know, within like walking distance of the store, they had to have 6 months worth of, you know, non-perishable goods on hand.
Well, after,
not that way today.
Especially after the derecho of, 2 years ago, two summers back. And this is not to get all Alex Jonesy with the program. I just consider it wise to always have several gallons of jugged water and several pounds of rice and beans handy. It won't be particularly flavorful, but, you know, it can be yummy. You can make it good. But, you know, those are staples. That's starches and carbs and protein right there. And you can get through some hard times on that, as millions of poor people can tell you, you know, us poor.
Speaking of food, I found the recipe.
A buddy of mine gave me a great recipe, pasta vizzola, beans and macaroni.
Yep.
And he got it from his grandmother to his mother, and then he got it, and that's depression food, buddy. Yep. And you're right about the food supply, because, I mean, I've learned how it is, you know. If you don't have it, you're hungry. Of course, I don't do that. I don't go hungry at all. Well, I wish, my waistband wishes I would, you know. But you guys are right. A just-in-time production, too, was another thing. If you guys are familiar with that term and how it was started, and just-in-time production, if you don't have not hip to it, see if you can find it on the Internet. Because it was one of the highest paid, one of the jobs I always saw on the want list was time study engineers. Because these guys were always, every dangle, whether it's a profit, those guys were learning it, you know. Go ahead, fellas. I'm just, you know, just throwing it out there.
I just am noticing, that if people want to keep up on stuff, especially with technology, they have to keep on buying. Same thing with cars. They feel like they have to buy a new something every 2 or 3 years, and they come to expect it, that they're just going to be able to replace everything. So they don't worry about saving or keeping anything going, you know. And this is the way that, you know, the developing or developed countries think. And
yeah,
I'm just
Yeah, you want to hear my weird thing, Larry?
Okay.
I went and ordered a Wi-Fi extender because it always pisses me off that as soon as I go into the shop, all my Wi-Fi stuff quit working. Like, I walked around with a Kindle in my back pocket so I could listen to Bob. But as soon as I go in the shop, it dies. So I finally ordered a Wi-Fi extender, and I found the perfect place for it off on the divider that goes between the rock shop and the man cave. I had to wire in a plug today because I can do that shit. I still haven't forgot. So I put in a plug over there where the Wi-Fi extender can see the house real good, and there's no blockage to it, and I got Wi-Fi in the man cave now. So that's my little story of...
Well, when Richard Wolff talks about his discussion about capitalism, I hope people know who Richard Wolff is. He says that what has happened to the American working community or the working class since 1973, because of this economy, they've gone through a trauma, because of what the neoliberal, economic regime has imposed upon people. And I'm wondering if how that you deal with a situation where the society goes through a collective trauma because they're suffering from severe economic depression, and how they're able to deal with it, because it doesn't seem that the government, or it doesn't seem that the corporations or the big institutions in the country want us to think that everything's just going to go along just wonderfully, and we should just buy stuff and spend money and have a good time, and that doesn't seem... I'm not making any sense, but you get the general gist. I mean...
Well, it isn't sustainable, I mean, it's eventually going to crash, and will we be able to maintain a technological society after the crash? Maybe yes, and maybe no. It depends on how we do things. Because you can have a sustainable technological society. You just have to be vigilant about recycling. You can't have the, I must upgrade every 2 years mentality, I mean, only time will tell, Larry. Only time will tell.
Lottie was talking yesterday about the pipeline. Remember, Sergi, we were talking last night, Devin and you and... You and I and Jason and I think it was Jason, you, Devin and I and Lottie were talking, and he was mentioning an article or something that you should be listening to, Heather Goldstone, and I was listening to a program that talked about the pipeline, and all of these people, including not only the petroleum industry, but journalists that were covering it, we're saying we're going to have to get used to the fact that if there is no Keystone Pipeline, there are other pipelines being built, and no matter what we do, they'll find a way to get the oil down to the Gulf Coast. And Lottie was saying that the most important part of the whole equation is to make sure that they don't pump the oil out of the ground in the first place. So I'm wondering,
the whole thing, Larry. Whether it's oil or gas or coal, of course my focus is coal, but there's really any answer that doesn't say leave it in the ground is to one degree or another a fraudulent answer.
Well, Bob, that brings me to what we were talking about last night, and IEA, International Energy Association, put out something a week or two ago. It says coal is set to overtake all other fossil fuels in the next 5-10 years whatever, and that if it is not curbed or left in the ground or whatever, And this is from the IEA. I mean, you know, this is no liberal institute. They're talking about a 6 degrees Celsius temperature rise, global temperature average rise, by the year 2050. If we continue on the current path.
Yeah, but you got to remember the stuff above the ground is worth more than the stuff still in the ground. My way of looking at it. Sunlight in the wind. And the ocean currents and the water, the rainwater that flows.
This is just them talking about where we're headed right now.
Yeah, but Scotland did 100% of their energy off of wind. Was it last month, I think it was? And they're showing the way.
And there needs to, and that's part of the reason I brought up that story about the, you know, they can hack down our grid. You know what? If we've got a distributed grid, that's a lot harder to do. And that's,
oh, shit.
That's where we need the real technological innovation. Storage technology and transmission technology. How do you get all the wind, all the potential wind energy of, say, North Dakota and all the potential solar energy of Arizona and Nevada to, you know, the major population centers?
Well, now, the original nuclear energy number was they built a reservoir somewhere in a up high in some mountains of California, and at night they were using the excess electricity generated by a nuclear plant to pump the water up the mountain into the reservoir because it's cheaper to just run the nuclear power plant full bore all the time instead of raising it and lowering it based on demand. So the extra energy was used to pump water up, and then at the high demand they were running turbines down the hillside and using hydroelectric to generate the increased demand from noon to 6 o'clock at night. And that kind of storage, although the cost to build the infrastructure is high, once it's built, there's virtually no maintenance on that storage system. When you're talking about lithium ion or lead acid or something else for a chemical storage, now you're talking real expense.
Yep.
Or carbon capture. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
if you're going to use natural gas or coal or oil, now, yeah, you got to talk about carbon capture. But I'm just talking about the store energy. Water is one hell of a storage number. If you got a couple of thousand feet of drop, you've got a hell of a lot of energy stored.
And the thing about it is that if we are to survive and if we are to maintain a technological society, we are going to have to get more efficient or else we're doomed.
Well, LED and curly Q compact fluorescence as opposed to incandescence is a hell of a lot of that.
Oh, yeah, the city of Fort Worth now, you know, down here, whenever they replace streetlights now or put up new ones, they've been putting in LED streetlights that are a lot more energy efficient. And after midnight, when the traffic lowers between midnight and 5 a.m., on a lot of the routes, the city will switch off every other streetlight so that, you know, it's, you know, 50% less energy use, you know.
Well, let me throw something out for general consideration. By the way, it's about 14 minutes past the hour on this Friday on the front porch, and I want to thank again Dr. John for making his challenge this evening, which was admirably met by Eric. Thank you both very kindly. We have another $50 to go to finish out a typical evening's fundraising goal of $150. It would be great if we could do that in any combination, or, you know, not to say that that's the end of whatever. And remember, the premiums remain on the table via Sparky, your choice, smoky ghost pepper cheese, or any one of a number of flavors of 1 pound bags of pistachios for any $100 contribution. So by all means, if you're interested in either one of those, jump right in. But it would be nice to get all the way to an evening's fundraising goal tonight. So thank you all very kindly in advance. I wanted to share this with you because I thought it was rather, it is a very interesting topic, and it's well thought out. This comes from our buddy John, different John, Johannes on the Southern Front Range. He writes, Robertus Hillbillicus, Hillbilly Bob, if you would be so kind, please discuss, and I'm throwing this out to the entire group, and I think it'll prove interesting. If you would be so kind, please discuss, examine, analyze, or otherwise offer your opinions, preferably in the course of a filibobster, on the historical success of violence, individual and institutional, and the inevitable effects of its inevitable ensuing intimidation on the nonviolent, or in any event, the less violent. That is, doesn't the biggest, baddest, and most amorally brutal bully almost always get his way? And is this outcome to be seen as a part of some sort of natural selection or ethical entropy? If a person or a state or an entity, corporation, the latter two being ultimately controlled by so-called persons, doesn't acknowledge and act in accordance with a morality or rules or boundaries in effect as a prime underpinning of what is called civilization or civilized behavior, see crime warfare-themed video games, see military rules of engagement, what can be done to bring about a humane and decent world? In my experience, the one with the most active and selfish behavior, the biggest elbows and fists, gets to the front of the line. Feel free to disabuse me of this conclusion. Depressedly yours, Johannes on the Southern Front Range. He says, P.S., yeah, I know that you're not my or anybody else's analyst, but I do value your thoughts. And not just mine, but the entire group's. So is it naturally the default position of humanity that the people who get their way are the people who are most willing to engage in violence?
No.
I would say yes.
Yeah.
And not just violence, but also, you know, there's a lot of nonviolent ways to just hose people over in an immoral, amoral fashion. That's how the banksters do it, you know. So I would say that, yes, violence and through nonviolent sleazy means, yeah. It's pretty much the rule is that it's the worst people that get to the top.
It feels like
every environmental battle that's ever happened where the environmentalists win, they never fully win. Because somebody's going to come along and fight it again. And I'm talking about putting a subdivision on prime ag land. You can fight it and fight it and fight it. And every time you win, okay, you win. But once they put the subdivision on it, it's never going to be ag land again.
Yeah.
And you lose.
Yeah.
Well, I think ancillary or corollary to that is the idea that you never really win, because even if you win, they never go away.
They never go away.
And there's a classic example of this coming out of Kentucky this week. There's an outfit out there called Fraser Creek Mining. They're owned by a pair of Indian brothers who are basically the subcontinental equivalent of the Koch brothers. Their name is Shashi and Ravi Ruia. They own an outfit called Fraser Creek Mining. And a lawsuit has been filed claiming that the Commonwealth of Kentucky isn't enforcing the law, because it turns out that Fraser Creek Mining is apparently copying and pasting all of its environmental reports. They're not even doing the testing. They've just got somebody sitting in a room copying and pasting results and filing them as new forms on a month-to-month basis. No, I'm not kidding.
Oh, God.
And they've been caught. Well, and it's not like this is the first time. They've been caught time and time and time again. And every time the Commonwealth of Kentucky says, bad coal company, bad. Make
well,
better.
For Johannes, I can say.
Yeah, it's just John. I mean, he's John.
Oh,
he's being facetious.
Oh, John, anyway. John or Johannes. there are a number of people that have been studying nonviolence theory or peace theory for a long time. Johann Galtung and Gene Sharp and these people, and they've come up with various theories about how, you know, how to come up with how to develop or sustain a peaceful or nonviolent society. Unfortunately, I don't know how they work in practice, so I can't, you know, because I don't know whether or not their ideas have been fully thought out and whether or not they've been applied in either limited or not, or a broader sense. And, you know, it takes a while for, and there's a lot of possibilities that people can misuse the theory. But those people, Gene Sharp and Johann Galtung and Michael Nagler and various people have been studying nonviolence, and they put forth their ideas, which are that, you know, we can have a nonviolent society if we are willing to put forth, if we're willing to, you know, try to put into practice these particular ideas. But that, you know, that's the only way that I can help. I can't tell you whether or not we are, you know, inherently you know, evil or inherently a violent, you know, species or not. And there are other places that I don't know where to go, like, you know, evolutionary psychology and all kinds of places where you can get people, you know, putting forth ideas. But whether or not anything gets done in practice, I don't know. This culture doesn't seem to be terribly concerned about looking at nonviolence in any kind of real serious way. So,
well, a nonviolent society is great as long as we want to shoot the assholes that don't want to participate.
Yeah.
Yeah, Larry, there is, yeah, there's never going to be, you know, they can toss around all the theories that they want to, but the fact of the matter is, and the evidence bears me out on this, is that humans by nature are twisted, evil sociopaths who will screw each other over for so much as a potato chip. So,
you know what Lottie was saying? We talked about race and ethnicity, and Lottie was saying, Larry, human beings are racist. They just, anytime that somebody sees somebody who is different, they automatically think in terms of race and ethnicity. But then you and I brought up the concept that race and ethnicity are social constructions. They are constructed out of social and historical circumstances in order to ideologically prop up one particular group's ideology over another, or to justify some political or economic system or arrangement or whatever. So what can I say?
Can I jump in here for a minute?
Yes.
Larry?
Yeah.
In a roundabout way, I helped bomb the shit out of Vietnam during the later stages of the war, and the capitalists, the whole end of the war basically was the capitalists moved into all of Southeast Asia, take it over and build their factories, and they found great places to work in Thailand. The people accepted the capitalist system. Now we have the Gulf War. We went in there and we bombed the shit out of Iraq and shit. But the capitalist system couldn't get in there fast enough to change the way the people thought. And now the religion part is coming back in. So we have to fight them again to try and get the capitalist system back in there. That's my little rant.
Humans gravitate towards violence. Humans gravitate towards just being horrible to each other.
Look who's the biggest benefactor of the TPP is going to be is Vietnam. They're going to be tearing down factories in China and moving them to Vietnam.
And Cambodia. Mm-hmm. And the moneyed interests in Singapore are going to be behind it.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Let me make a really left turn, right turn, whatever. I want to know when the Rosebud Sioux Reservation starts challenging the United States government using eminent domain to conquer their territory, which is in a separate, independent country according to treaty. And people show up with guns and challenge the contractors that are there are the same group of people that went down to Clive Bundy's ranch in Las Vegas going to show up and support the Rosebud Sioux and prevent the government takeover of their land.
When pigs fly.
Probably not.
And when the sky turns to cotton candy, and when bears start crapping Skittles, that's when that's going to happen.
Those white people that have supported Bundy, they'll be right with the government against the Native Americans.
Yeah. What and a bunch of fucking hypocrites!
Yeah,
without a doubt. I didn't know that was an open question. Mm-hmm. I thought that was resolved by now, Roger.
Well, no, that was one of the things I wrote down this week to bring up tonight was, come on, those folks that were down there supporting Clive Bundy, not paying his $1 million to graze his cows on federal land, are they going to support the constitutional right of the Rosebud Sioux to protect their own land? The way they supported, and what would happen if they showed up? Would the government back off, or would the government blow them away like they did at Wounded Knee?
Well, I don't want to see another, the Wounded Knee in 1890, and then the Wounded Knee in 1973, and the whole thing with Leonard Peltier although I am certainly going to support, the Native American, to protect their land. I just don't want to see a bunch of white folks going down there and doing.
Well, but now you got to go back a little bit further. You know why they want to do the Keystone is because I forget the name in Canada they call them, not Native people, the
First Nation.
The First Nation people said, no, you're not going to run a pipeline from Alberta all the way out to Vancouver to do this. It's not going to cross our land. And so when they got shut down from going west out of Alberta is when they decided to go south through the United States. Now, if the Native people of Canada can stop the pipeline, why can't the Native people of the United States
because
stop
Canada,
the pipeline?
Well, because
the Native people of Canada did not stop the pipeline. The pipeline was stopped by British Columbia refusing that stuff to pass through their territory.
But it would have
gladly shoved it right on over the First Peoples.
But it was the First Nation
folks against their will.
Are the ones that stopped it going through British Columbia. They would not let it cross their land.
Well, and I'm saying that had they had the access to the West Coast through British Columbia, they would have pushed it through there anyways.
Yeah.
No, the Native peoples said, no, it ain't crossing our land. And that's why British Columbia didn't do it. That's why British Columbia didn't do it, is because they honor their treaties with the First People.
Well,
and if the United States is going to be like Canada, they're going to honor the Rosebud Sioux and say it ain't crossing that territory.
Well, the Canadian government historically, I don't know about right now, but until they apologized, until they made a public apology years ago as to how, about how they treated First Nations people in, you know, in their country. They were just as they may not have been warrior-like toward Native Americans to the extent that we were, but they still put First Nations people in boarding schools, and they still tried to separate them, and they still said, you know, we're going to inculcate, you know, First Nations people with white culture and all that kind of stuff. Things may be different now, but in this country, I don't see where Native American peoples are going to get very much support from survivalist white populist. Well, you get the general.
And I bring it up as a hypocrisy of the white survivalist assholes.
Yep. Well, and there's also the, the white liberal, let's all sit on the ground and sing Kumbaya and, nobody's going to actually help them. You know, they're just going to, sing Kumbaya and then, they'll get toted away and it'll happen anyways.
I'm not planning on grabbing my ammunition and my deer rifle and driving up to South Dakota and being a part of an armed resistance to prevent the pipeline from being built. I'm not going to do that. I've still got a few years left in my life. I'm not ready to die yet, but whatever. But what I'm thinking is that this standoff that happened at the Bundy Ranch, I can see a similar standoff happening on the Rosebud Reservation. Because when the president up there says this is an act of war to force eminent domain for a foreign corporation to cross our land, and we're not going to get anything for it, because you know the workers aren't going to be from that Rosebud Reservation, and they're going to come in with their big tractors and dig a big ditch and put in a pipeline and be down the road. It's their right to say, no, you're not crossing our land to benefit a foreign corporation. If the tribe wants to build a school, I can see them using eminent domain to build a school or a water treatment plant or something that benefits them. But this pipeline is not going to benefit them.
The tribe can. It is their land and it is a sovereign nation. I mean, it's not the United States. It is a sovereign nation. And, yes, if the tribe wants to do eminent domain, but what will happen is the federal government will say, well, we're taking that back. And, they'll come in.
Treaty 1851 and the Treaty 1858 does not give the United States government the right to appropriate that land. That land was given to the Rosebud Sioux in perpetuity.
Roger,
the laws of the United States did not give Andrew Jackson the right to
actually they did. I mean, the Congress passed the Indian Removal Act.
The Supreme Court found it as unconstitutional.
That's right. And then Andrew Jackson said, well, we just won't. But every time that there is a question of, every time that the United States wants to abrogate, I think that's the right word, abrogate or ignore a treaty that they've made with Native Americans, they've always found a way to negate that particular treaty, and they do it over and over and over and over and over again.
Oh yeah.
So they'll
fight every day of the week.
Are we speculating too far down the road, though?
I don't think so.
I think
But what I'm getting at is the Rosebud tribe sitting down and singing Kumbaya is not going to stop the excavator from coming in and digging the damn ditch. Well, and this gets us back who has the most power, who has the most guns, and who's going to do the fight.
Well, let's go to the first battle, Roger. this Congress is going to, and the president are going to fight this out first. Then where are we going to go from there?
The Senate already voted their little measure down.
Yeah, but that won't last.
They'll do it again. They'll do it again in January. And anybody who here who thinks that Harry Reid's going to allow any filibustering, on the part of the minority, well, you know, you're a bigger optimist than I am.
Well, yeah.
I don't think Keystone XL is happening on Obama's presidency.
Well, the thing is,
the
thing is, he has a right to veto it. He has an absolute right to veto it because since it crosses national borders, it is a matter for the Department of State, and he can veto it. And it would be better better done sooner rather than later. It would be better done before the new Congress can come in and even take the measure up.
But the new Congress can still come in and pass a law,
which he can veto.
Well, but that's going to be.
And then they'll come back with more than 67 votes.
No, they won't. No, they won't.
It will be law.
They couldn't get 60 votes in favor of it this time through. At best, they're going to have 4 or 5 more. They're not going to get to 67, for starters. And that also means that you'd have to have a 2/3 majority in the House. And there really ain't no chance of 60 of the 2/3 majority in the House. But more importantly, the money's already been cranked up. My God, between the American Petroleum Institute, the Koch brothers, the various and sundry labor unions, there have been millions upon millions of advocacy dollars already poured into this. But what is critical here, what I think is the more important analysis, is the extent to which Congress's action relative to a presidential power is a violation of separation of powers. Now, either the State Department has this power or they do not.
And because it's international, the State Department has the power.
Precisely. That's why it's not. That's why the whole damn thing hasn't been built yet.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be built. Not until they change the executive branch. Obama ain't signing off on this. He already would have by now if he was going to. It ain't happening.
And bear in mind that every day that goes by that it's not built makes it a little harder to build because you don't just have all that infrastructure in place, all that and ready to go, and not do it. When you're not producing, it costs money.
The investors are going to go look for somewhere else to put their money.
Well, on the other side of it is a bunch of the permits to build it through either Kansas or Nebraska or one of those states. Those permits have expired, and now they got to get new permits.
South Dakota and Nebraska.
Okay.
I think the real fight's up there in Canada and getting them some bitches to just leave it in the ground.
Well, as long as the Saudis keep dropping the price of their crude, it becomes less and less economically viable.
I read where if the investor class leaves the tar sands, just won't touch it anymore. I mean, it's probably the same with coal. If you can get the investors out of coal, you might be able to win the battle.
That's a tough one, Sparky. Because
what'd you go to Europe for?
But to get the banks to quit financing. And it's a viable strategy, but it's also a very difficult one, because when you do chase public investment out of it, that just means that the hedge fund managers jump in, and they're less accountable even than shareholders. Ultimately, the problem is the profitability, because for instance, let's talk about financing a mountaintop removal site. Well, you got to have a whole bunch of really expensive equipment, and you got to pay about 12 people $100,000 a year. So that's, you know, your labor costs are roughly, you know, call it, by the time you work in insurance and stuff like that, your labor costs are up north of $2 million a year for about 5 years to take down an entire complex. So that's $10 million over the life of the project, because each permit is 5 years long. Then you've got to have all the heavy equipment. And what happens is the Wall Street outfits and the international finance banks like Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank and Credit Agricole and Royal Bank of Scotland, outfits like that, they don't make money on the bond deals or the finance deals because of the value of the negotiable instruments. They make money. They make their money on the front end by performing the service of making the issue, of doing the bond issue. So the banks are insulated against any potential losses. With that being the case, ultimately what has to happen is it has to be made unprofitable. And so far it hasn't. Because the coal companies bake it, like we were talking about one night, the coal companies bake in, as do all the other hydrocarbon companies, they bake in the costs of their violations. They bake in the cost of their fines as the cost of doing business, because a lot of the times they don't even pay the damn things. They just thumb their noses at the state regulators.
And they have the dead peasant policies on all those employees for, you know, $1 million or more apiece.
Now, I don't know. I mean, I don't know about those. I haven't heard about them lately. I remember when Walmart was doing them.
Yeah, I mean, I have a friend who works, you know, at a coal-fired power plant who, you know, they have a $1 million policy on him.
Who's the beneficiary?
The company. It's a dead peasant policy.
The coal company buys an insurance policy on all the miners and
then incinerates them.
The company is the beneficiary, and if they get incinerated, the company makes money, which is more than what they're going to pay to the survivors, heirs of the dead peasant.
Yeah, I mean, you know, the only thing that you may get the workers' comp claim for, you know, survivors' benefits, but, you know, the way things are now, you're probably not going to get it. And, you know, even if, you know, that being the case, you may get the, Social Security death benefit, which is, you know, not much of anything.
Used to be about $250. I don't know what it is now.
It's still $250. Yeah, it's still $250.
It's only paid out to the spouse.
Minor
children.
Yeah.
The funeral director will open the door for that price.
Well, you can't even get cremated for $250.
No. But my dad got the money for my mom when she passed, but then I tried to claim it for my dad, and it don't work that way.
Well, Blankenship will cremate you for less than $250, but, you know.
Yeah, but you got to go crawl into a mine to do that.
Oh, I wanted to say, I may go up to see my folks. It's the first Thanksgiving I've had that both of them have been gone.
Well, both of mine are scattered up on the Salmon River. Well, California Salmon River, not Idaho Salmon River.
My mom and dad are at the Veterans Cemetery in Igo. And a little bit of them are here at the house. And a little bit of them went down a creek in up in the mountains in Yuba River country, out of Allegheny.
Yeah, well, both mom and dad are scattered on both North and South Fork and the main stem of the Salmon River in California. And that's where Dad wanted to go, and Mom said, scatter me where your father was. So I went and did that.
Mom and Dad's plaque says, gone golden mining, gone fishing.
No, there's no plaque for my mom and dad. I just scattered them.
Well, he was a veteran, and that's what he wanted.
Yeah, well, and if that's what he wanted, that's what you did, and that's fantastic.
I don't believe in tombstones and that either. That's a lot of money for somebody else. Give it to my heirs if I have.
A vet bill, it only cost me an extra $500 to have my mom entombed with my dad. Ashes. And that's it. They make the plaque. It's a veteran cemetery.
Well, once upon a time, the VA was a good thing. I don't know what it is now.
It's still a good thing. It's got problems, but it's still a good thing.
Yeah.
And this, our veteran cemetery is one of the newest in California. There's a lot of people up there already. It's a beautiful place.
There's a whole lot of veterans that are killing themselves every day, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a sad situation, yes.
Anyhow, another shift. This is for Sparky. I've had a problem for about a year, year and a half. Got some damn three-way light switches in my kitchen that didn't work right, and it took me about 4 hours today. But I finally got the bastards to work. Three-way switches are a pain in the butt.
Not laughing at you, Roger, laughing with you.
Wait a minute, Bill, everybody. You know what I used to tell my apprentices? There's 7 ways to wire a three-way switch, and you're going to learn all of them.
And there's 28 ways to do it, but only 4 of them work.
I studied this when I was young. There's only 7 ways to wire a three-way switch, and I can't explain it to you. I have to draw it. It's the only way I can do it. But all you got to remember is the power has to be on one end, and the switch leg has to be on the other end, and then you have the two travelers is what we call them.
Yeah, well,
That's probably too. I probably confused you already.
No. My problem is that when I first, either I did it or somebody else did it, and the colors of the wires didn't do what they were supposed to be, what they were, blah blah blah, and so it took me a lot of time to figure out where the hot lead was coming in and what the travelers were and what the return was.
You know what I always told an apprentice, first thing I told an apprentice starting to learn about electricity, I said, remember one thing, wire does not know what color it is.
I procrastinated on this damn thing for about a year. One switch worked, and then the other one, if it was up or down, then the other one would work, but if that was down, it wouldn't work, and, you know, the lights turned on and off, it didn't turn on and off the way you wanted them to. And I thought about, damn it, I invite Sparky over here and give him a steak dinner and tell him if he comes over here and fixes his son of a bitch, I'll give him a steak dinner. So I never called you, I did it myself.
Oh, I can fix it, I don't need to know the color of the wire.
No, but I got them working. Got them working.
Right. I'm just saying, I mean, wire color is just what you assigned. There's a basic standard for wire color. You know that?
Oh, yeah. Red, white, and black.
Well, in a house, it's black, white, and green, and red in a three-conductor cable.
Right.
Red usually signifies a switch leg. Well, then you get into commercial work, and depending on the power you have in the building, like 120 208 system, you have black, red, blue for the three, it's three-phase power, and and then the white is the neutral, and green is ground. Then you get into a 480 system, and then it's brown, orange, yellow, and then green is ground, and the gray wire is your neutral, because you're sending 277 over the two legs. And when they join together, it's 480. The difference of potential, remember? One's at a positive and negative. I mean, I could go on and on.
And I'm not trying to go through an entire...
I don't want to give a class on electricity.
No, I'm not, and I'm not asking for a class. I just thought you'd appreciate the fact that it only took me about 3 hours to deal with three three-way light switches today and get the bastards to work right. And you probably could have done it in 3 minutes, but it took me three hours.
Oh, it would probably took me a little bit longer than that. But I did get my new voltage detector in the mail the other day. My old one, my trusty voltage detector, we call them sniffers, that I've had for years. I stuck it on a hot bus bar one time years and years ago, and it melted the tip of it. And if you've never seen one of these things, it lights up when you get near voltage. Well, I melted the end of it, and then it finally crapped out on me the other day. So I can't live without a. That's one of my life insurance. I got a Fluke T1000 I use meter. That's really good, and I had to have that voltage detector. So I went to Amazon and bought one. We went to Home Depot. My stepson was with me, and I looked around, and I looked at the ones they had at Home Depot, and I go, no, I got to have a Fluke. They don't sell Fluke. I got to order a Fluke. Because Fluke's like the Rolls Royce of testers.
Well, I just run with a multimeter.
Well, I put it to good use today when I ran out that new outlet for the Wi-Fi booster. I had to have it placed in the right place or it wouldn't work. I was so glad I got that to work. I can take my internet radio into the man cave now and listen to Bob. Couldn't do that before.
And by the way, Sparky, the gnome has been looking down on the proceedings all evening. He seems to be happy where he is.
What did Ferg say when he saw that again?
Oh, he laughed.
Because when he was here, I said, you think I should send this back to you guys? I said, yeah, go ahead. I said, okay.
Did your dad carve that?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I'll have to shoot a picture of him standing next to the gargoyle.
Yeah, post it on Facebook or something.
Yeah, I will.
And you can post a picture of the cowbell too if you want.
Yeah, maybe they're up here on the top shelf. I'll just sort of line them all up together.
I tell you that when I told everybody I was going to send that back to you. Yeah, everybody starts freaking out. Oh, my daughter-in-law goes, I want it. I said, how'd he give it away? And then I said, look out there on the back porch hanging from that railing that comes down from the door. There is a genuine cowbell from Switzerland. I said, you can have that one if you want it. So next week, I'll bring that cowbell in here from Switzerland and ring it for you.
Well, this son of a gun is sturdy. I mean, this is heavy. The clapper in it weighs a ton. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea where that came from, and I don't know where.
Oh, it's got to be old as hell.
My stepson found it. He was going through some stuff out there. I mean, we cleaned up and reorganized the place. Yep, it looks like a cleaned up ready to go shopping, and we can build things in again.
Make stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, slightly other jump back in time. You read something of an email that be working in the garden and being able to be on the Skype calls and all the rest of that, and that has to do with a Plantronics headset that Sparky turned me on to a while back.
And that's the same headset that Dr. Bill now uses even.
Yeah, and the Plantronics headset to me has been fantastic. Now, the range is not as good as a smartphone I have now that I don't have service on, but it hooks into the Wi-Fi. Gives me a lot more range around the garden than the Plantronics headset. Mm-hmm. But the Plantronics headset is the one that enables me to be in the garage or up in the study or in the kitchen or the rest of that kind of stuff. So you might want to get yourself a old smartphone if you have Wi-Fi. Don't get service for it. Just run it off the Wi-Fi. And that's great for just listening. But if you want to do the Skype stuff, the Plantronics headset, USB number, it was really easy to hook up.
Yeah, it's a good headset. How is it for music? I haven't tried it with music.
Beats the shit out of me. I don't listen to music.
It's a headset, Larry.
Well, I know, but I was talking with the guy in Radio Shack before I came over here. He said the wireless headsets are good, but they don't have the kind of frequency range that the other headsets, you know,
Larry, there isn't a I don't think there's a spot in your apartment you can go that you won't be in range with that headset.
Okay.
No. I think what Larry's talking about, Sparky, is the frequency response of the audio reproduction on a Bluetooth wireless transmission, whether there's the spectrum there to carry all of the music. And of course everybody knows that you lose a substantial amount of audio quality just compressing to an MP3. That's why a lot of audio files prefer what are called lossless formats. But hey, we got to get out of here. This has been a rousing good conversation. Thanks all of y'all, and we will close the program only $50 away from the evening's fundraising goal, which is wonderful. Thank you, Dr. John, and thank you, Eric, for responding to Dr. John's challenge. Thank you, Joan, for finishing up with Robert's challenge last night. It's really, really helpful to be able to pay bills as bills come due. And thanks all of y'all. Thank you, Sparky. Thank you, Roger. Thank you, Larry. Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Devin and Sergi and Jay Cruzen. Thank you, Bill, over on the Gizmo line. One and all, thank you for a wonderful Friday on the front porch. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Texas Betsy, moderators in the chat room. Thank you to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan and Carol Baker. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and acact.org. A reminder, the Horn Malloy Skype chat group will continue at about 12:05 Eastern Time after the Friday Night Malloy program. Just send a contact request to Sparky Dunk on Skype, SparkyDunc. And you, too, can be part of the ongoing conversation, which is a real, real dandy. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Have a great weekend, everybody.